Being called to order. Can we all stand? Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Any changes to the agenda? Looking for a motion to approve the agenda as presented.
So moved. Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay. There is no seeing no public to comment. Did you have one to comment, Barb?
No.
Thank you. Consent agenda. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved. Second.
Okay, any discussion about the items on the consent agenda?
If I may bring to court's attention that there was a last minute addition to the warrants, which were not emailed to you as because of last minute nature. So you notice they're included on the overview page 11 of your agenda, and also the third page in of those warrant copies is that detail for you.
So we have our notebook is current.
That is correct. We have our notebook is current.
I had one quick question because I couldn't remember. On the first page of warrants, there's a check to the AET Commercial Construction for $14,500. What is that?
That's our medical.
Oh, okay. It was the commercial construction. Throw me with. That's the medical carrier.
Yes.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Why are they called commercial construction? Blah blah blah.
That I don't know why.
Weird. Good question, Bruce. Anything else?
No questions.
Are you seeking another question, Bruce?
No, I'm just looking at the new page, and okay. Don't have any questions.
Okay. So all in favor of approving the consent agenda as presented?
Aye.
Okay, and the financial report.
Before I turn this over to Juanita, I'd just like to bring a couple things to your attention. You're going to see two different reports added to the financials that we haven't done before. One is a comparison between 16 and 17, which I think is a valuable tool for us. Mm-hmm. And then Juanita is going to be passing out the form that we've been talking about of following percentages by category of spend to annual budget.
So that's not in our notebook yet, is it?
No.
So you mean for the same month a year ago?
Yeah.
That's 16-17.
Right. Right. And then Juanita's is basically taking every category and looking at the percentage of the annual budget we've spent. It's a little hard in January to see the trends, but it's a good tool knowing that one month is 8.5% of our annual budget. You can look at those percentages and see basically where we're going. Some of the things that we pay for, like dues and subscriptions on an annual basis, are going to look way out of whack, but they'll eventually catch up with each other. So with that, Juanita, you're next.
So passing around the form, like you said, the percentage of our budget month to the year comparison. See where we're at every month monthly, so that's going to be very helpful, I think. So that being said, the expenses should be or less to know that we're kind of sort of on budget. Kind of depends where everything is. Some months we'll have more, some months we'll have less. So back to the financials, if you don't have any.
Can Can I have, you have a kind of a comment? I'd like us to track all the ferry expenses, which would include the Verlaine, so we can establish a cost basis when Kitsap Transit may want to take that over, so we know how much it's costing us to maintain those facilities, if we could do that. And I think that would be helpful for us. And then I know I mentioned before our launch from that category. I understand we've got some work to do there. I think it would be good to track how much that's costing us, because I think we need to recover. You know, we paved, now we have, well, we'll talk about that later. So those are two areas I think would be helpful to track.
And I do have that class costs list again for, I'm going to share it at the end. When we do the staff comments, I don't have the vote launch on there yet.
I don't know if it's going to be meaningful for a relay, but we really should get a handle on what it costs us to maintain that facility.
So did you want a class cost separate from ferry and the Verlaine, or ferry?
I think it should include together. Ferry and Verlaine should be together. I think that's
that makes sense.
That's the way they are right
now. Oh, okay, okay, okay.
That's
good.
The end.
Good.
So in the end of month, January 31st of this year, we are the one thing that jumped out to Jim and I was the wages. Compared to the budget, and that had to do with two holidays in January.
I thought it was because we were paying an executive director this year.
Well, that's for sure. Well, the other thing is we kept Marvin on because we had so many Christmas lights to take down, and we wanted to get them down in an expeditious manner. We kept one of our seasonal staff on for the month of January, so that wasn't budgeted for. It is a little out of whack at $3,000 over budget.
Yeah, and I just averaged the income, the salaries over, I just divided that over 12, and that's the budget amount for each month, so it's going to fluctuate.
So as I look at the percentage sheet that you just gave us, I'm looking on the second page under expenses, wages, salaries and wages, 8.8%. I think you said anything over like 8.5 or 8.75. So we're really quite close to on budget.
Yeah.
Okay.
That includes employee benefits. Wages and salaries. It's a loaded rate.
That wages and salaries and the expenses.
Oh, medical separate. Okay, pension.
Medical and pension are separate.
Okay, good.
And those are going to be increased because wages are increased.
Sure, I know. Okay, thank you.
So the categories, yacht club land, aviator land, what is that referring to?
That is our income for the aviator, yacht club, and that's the lease spaces. So it shows zero for yacht club because this is off the cash basis, and they pay their rent after January 31st.
So they pay a month in arrears rather than a month in advance, is that?
Yes, I mean, the bill goes out before the end of the month, but they still pay it after the end of the month. That makes sense.
And the check that they cut, say, on February 1, uh-huh. is for January's rent?
No, it's for February's
rent. It's for February's rent, okay, so the December check
is really January's rent.
Yeah. So, but somewhere in there, we should have gotten a check in January, I guess is what I'm thinking.
Unless they paid it
in December.
Or January, correct.
Okay.
And how does the diamond parking work? I see that basically almost half of the budget amount is shown for January for the whole year, so... I'm assuming that there's a way.
We're going to evict Diamond Parking here in the next 4 or 5 months because of the development up there. So we concentrated that annual rent amount into 4 months instead of 12 months. So, however, I do have a verbal agreement with Diamond Parking that allows them to stay as long as we're not doing work. So if we don't start work till September, October, we'll still keep that income.
They know it's coming, but nobody knows just when. Okay.
And the other question that I had about miscellaneous is there is a miscellaneous category.
And expenses?
And yes, sorry. And, okay, and then that's the total of the category. So the miscellaneous other, although it's a very small number and probably de minimis, is it, what does the $819 represent?
That might have to do with our employee appreciation dinner, because when I do it through credit card, the bill comes towards the end of the month and we don't pay for the following. That number was
excellent, thank you. Any other questions about this?
So income varies, yeah.
Okay.
Budget.
Yeah, just kind of take it all in. It's a lot of lines to look
yes,
at. Even in this bright light.
Yeah. If you have any questions, just come
yeah,
to one either or I later.
You yeah. need to keep tracking on this, and I think it's a good project.
Mm-hmm. Will the 2016-17 comparison sheet go forward on a year-to-date basis as well as a month-to-month basis?
Yes, both
great.
Ways.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah, I suppose one of these things I think I really want to get a handle on is when actuals vary from budget, then the board needs to take actions to rebalance the budget, I think, basically, or make a decision to go, you know, either into deficit or to do projects that we hadn't planned on doing. So I think one of the products of this thing would be to say, okay, what decisions do we need to make as we go forward in the year? And I know you've got some projects here that we're going to have to
yeah, right.
talk about that. But
yeah.
we also need to know dollars and cents wise,
sure.
how much do we have to take out of, say, the capital budget to do the project that's there.
Right. Plus also little things, smaller things, not necessarily little, but I noticed the Hill House budget. We budgeted on a higher rate than we actually got, and we were like at least 2 months delayed in getting anything. So over the year, that's going to continue to get farther apart. I mean, I wonder what it would take to just amend that part of the budget so we don't have a red flag there every month and go, oh, yeah, that's right.
I'm wondering if we ought to look at a quarterly based on January, February, March, so that in April and July, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good time to do a more intense look. We had talked about
right.
that
right.
so that we make course corrections
yeah,
quarterly. I'm not talking about pro forma, but I mean, you know, just kind mm-hmm. of your best guess of what you need to change.
Yeah. Things where we are pretty certain there's, or we know there's a difference, or we're certain there's going to be a difference.
I think the last time we talked about, well, we're going to put a hold on all capital projects. And that's really not the best way to do it. It's better to say, okay, exactly what should be cut back and,
mm-hmm.
or delayed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm done with this.
So do we have any timber? Why is timber excise tax here?
It's just a funny category that they put on there. But
timber leasehold excise.
It sounds funny, but sometimes they put tax income that we get from timber slash leasehold on there, so I got to put it somewhere.
So we actually get a share, besides schools getting a share of the timber leasehold tax?
Yeah, that's not very big.
Hey, cool.
Oh, they want to give us money.
Go OPG.
Could we close the door? Is there any objection to our closing the door?
I think it locks.
Oh. Well, we can fix it.
Noxious, okay.
Yeah. Can you
get
that key? Yeah. The hex key to...
Don't see anything good. is it trash in your pocket? I was going to say, is it trash in your trash can?
That doesn't work.
It doesn't?
You
oh, no,
there.
The
you
little yellow
foot
things
down.
Don't work.
Yeah.
There you go. That'll work.
That works.
That's great.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I think we get how this works, and we'll probably have questions every month for a while as we learn to use it.
Yeah, I just got assimilated. I'm lazy, not reading all this stuff anyway, so
yeah.
I'll get cracking on it. I think it's great. This comes straight up out of QuickBooks,
yes.
So it's not a separate thing. You just print out an existing database.
I had to adjust it a little bit because the percentage wanted to percent everything, and I had to say no percent, just the month.
Great.
So just a little adjustment, but.
Okay. Good. No, this is the data we're getting now is really helpful to getting an overall picture of things. So appreciate that you're able to crank it out.
Okay, so should we turn to the rest of the financials that we actually got in our packet and see if there's questions about that?
See, our transient mortgage continues to be below last year. Any ideas on that or any?
Well, yeah, I mean, we really need to work on that. One of the things that Juanita just signed up for, I think that will help us. You may want to talk to him about that.
Oh, okay. It's called DACWA. It's an app, and it's on online registration. I don't know what else I could say about it. It doesn't cost us anything. They do charge a credit card fee, which will come out of the deposit that they sent to us. And people just can either, if they have the app, they can put wherever they're at. I don't know if they do by coordinates or not, but they can put where they're at, and then it'll direct them to which marina is closest, or which marina would they like that accommodates their needs if they want. And then we'll ask them if they want to register for Mike Morgan, and they get yes or no. So when they register for the date, and it will send us an email, which we have to, of course, check in the morning, and we are the ones that whether we can accept it or not, whether we have space available. It will show, we will hopefully have a widget here soon to put on our website, so people who are looking at a marina can say, oh, I can register online. Be pretty interesting.
Will that kind of registration, the link from our website, will that go through this DACWA thing rather than direct to us?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, save us some extra work that we have to do. But Port of Paulsbow does it, and there's a port, Foss Marina, that does it over in Tacoma. They like it.
Good.
Well, we do need to do more advertising this year. We've got more ads going in the national magazines than we never had before, the directories. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to encourage that. It's a little tough right now because we don't know how much of guest mortgage we're going to be using for covered mortgage. Mm-hmm. So we've been kind of shying away from booking things too far in the future, not knowing if we need to take 10 boats and move them to transient mortgage out of our marina.
Now, this year we allowed reservations in the transient moorage for any time during the year. Is that a change from last?
It's a 12-month calendar.
Okay.
So I can book for next year today.
Okay, good.
Could you walk through how the fuel sales work again?
So, what page were you looking at?
On page 5.
Oh, there it is.
I'm sorry.
So it's the our sales of our gas and our diesel for the month of January, minus the cost of fuel that we purchased. I think we only purchased once in January, and then the next
filled is the difference.
You can see on page 6 that we're actually ahead. We've sold $228 more this year than we sold last year in January. It's the cost of fuel is one of those rotating things. We have 20,000 gallons of fuel in the tank. So when you buy all that fuel, it's going to sit there for 2 or 3 months until it gets sold. But as far as a month-to-date sales record, we're actually ahead of schedule.
We're actually a little ahead.
And that's cash, so you don't have to worry about LIFO stuff. It's whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever you spend and whatever you receive. Can you go over how we price our fuel?
It's 50 cents a gallon over what our bill is.
Okay.
So that's our upgrade, whatever. So if it costs me $2.25, we sell it for $2.75. So it's a 50 cent margin per gallon. One of the things, I've been talking to the owner of Puget Sound Express, who's very unhappy with fueling in Edmonds, and he's actually thinking of fueling the Chilcat with us. He goes through 80,000 gallons a year, and that's $40,000 of income to us to have that ferry come in and fuel up. And with our high-speed pump that we had for the ferry that we had, we can fuel him in a half hour. So it's great for him and great for us. So he's weighing that right now, whether he wants to come across the bay to save some money. They're charging him 80 cents a gallon.
Over their cost. Mm-hmm. Now the Chilcat runs where?
It's basically a whale watching trip, so it goes from Edmonds to the San Juans.
Okay. That's the guy that lives here at Kingston that runs that, is that right?
Oh, no, Pete Hanke.
Pete Hanke, right. That's right.
Commissioner from Port Tampa.
Yeah. That's good to know, because I think they're probably our competitor for transients.
Mm-hmm.
So since people fuel their boats going and coming.
Yeah. Yeah, 30 cents a gallon, that's
it's a lot. Potential. You're doing 80,000 gallons.
Yeah, well, even if you're only doing, 500 or 600 gallons. It
takes your breath away.
Love my canoe.
Do you think he will pull that trigger?
He was in last week, so we talked. So I actually told him to go back and try to negotiate a good deal with Mr. McChesney over there and tell him if Varnick's willing to give him a better deal. But we'll see. He's trying to negotiate this year's contract with Port of Edmonds, but he would like to move his fuel operation anyway.
Yeah. Is there any the pro is obviously the price. Is there any cons from his perspective?
Our fuel dock is much more accessible for a boat that size. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's wide open. He can get that 70-foot boat in. Edmonds fuel dock is very narrow and very hard to turn around.
How big is this boat?
76 feet.
Gosh, you could tie up that arm.
It's basically the same boat with a different outer skin as the Spirit, made by the same company.
Mm-hmm. So he could tie up in our float. Fuel and then go pick his people up where he picks them up.
Actually, at the tourism conversation, that event that was held over in Edmonds last year, there was quite a bit of discussion about triangle routing for the Puget Sound Express that mm-hmm. included Kingston
mm-hmm.
and with the upside being that you don't have to have a lot of stuff going on in Kingston to make that attractive, which is one of the down concerns that various folks in Edmonds think about Kingston. Why would we send our people over there when there's nothing to do?
Mm-hmm.
But when they're picking up whale watching people, they're not.
Yeah,
it's mm-hmm. a whole different thing, and that could be a real good thing for us. For the community, so that might be a thing.
And if whale watchers wanted to get off here and spend a little time here and then ride the ferry back, they end up in the same place for a very small fee.
We'll pick up here and drop off here.
Mm-hmm.
So
we'll continue that discussion. See,
Peninsula people.
Okay. Any other questions about the financial report?
All right.
Is there a? We don't do a resolution to accept it. Okay, that's just a report. Thank you. Okay, so that takes us to the resolution to surplus the Hill House washing machine and dryer.
Sam did such a great job of getting great tenants in the Hill House that actually have their own washer and dryer that are better than the washer and dryer that was in there. We really have no need for the washer and dryer down there. So they actually wanted us to remove it from the house, which was fine, we could do. And we got thinking of if we surplus that, possibly we could help the community. And Sam and I was brainstorming about Kingston Cares really needs a washer and dryer, and this might be an opportunity to help that project out with something that's surplus and something that the port doesn't need.
Mm-hmm. Now, Kingston Cares, that they do the cold weather shelter, mm-hmm. right? But I was thinking about that because they've been, you know, wanting to use our washing
right.
facility.
Right.
Is there a place where they could put it?
Well, I just coming in, Sam and I ran into Mary Gleistein and asked her that very question. And she thinks that obviously the Village Green would be the best place. It's not plumbed right now, but possibly there's a place that they could figure out a way to plumb a washer and dryer in the other end.
I think that would be unlikely. This building was designed pretty tightly. If you look at the utility rooms, I think, though, they do have private individuals who live nearby who wash the sheets and towels and things like that. So that might be a more likely thing, or maybe in the old community center. But just having insider knowledge here, I think it would be difficult to locate it. But that's their problem.
Yeah.
If they want it, then, yeah.
So this is just it's port assets that we no longer need. We'd like authorization to surplus them and dispose of.
If we could do that kind of along whatever the mechanism was that we acquired the float from City of Poulsbo, so it's just a transfer from the port district to the park district or something like that, and they don't have to pay for it.
Right. I was going to suggest we just add a couple words at the end of the therefore be a resolved sentence to state to include donation to qualified nonprofit.
Yes. Okay.
To include, say it again.
To include donation to a qualified nonprofit.
Mm-hmm. Which means a 501c3.
And is that?
Yeah.
Qualification is the 501c3?
Right.
Yep.
Or does it have to be a C3 or could it be just a C?
Well, they are, actually. Yeah. Because they're helping. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think they actually are.
I was just wondering if we had to go through some other mechanism to get it there.
No, this is fine.
Yeah.
If we simply say to include donation, are we precluding the possibility of selling it somehow if we can't find a qualified?
Right, because the earlier language says surplus dispose of, so that could be by sale.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So is there a motion to approve and adopt resolution number 0201-2017 to surplus port assets, granting authority to the executive director to set value and dispose of the washer and dryer units from the Hill House to include donation to a qualified nonprofit?
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion of this? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. The next is agenda item 7B, the master plan update. Jim?
Well, I included in here a letter from RCO, and we all know that RCO, in order to be eligible for all of their grants, and they've listed them on their letter, we need to have a plan that's no older than 6 years old. So we had our master plan done in 2012, so they're reminding us in 2018, in order to be eligible, we need to update our plan. There are various things we can do, and I was talking to Commissioner Elliott about it. A lot of ports now update their master plan every year on an annual basis and approve it with the budget. We haven't done that, but it's a practice I think we should adopt, that we just go through our master plan, do all the edits we need to do, hold our public hearing when we do our budget public hearing, and readopt that master plan. The master plan that Corey put together is actually, in my opinion, a very good plan. It just needs updating. And I don't think it's that big of a job. And what I'd like to suggest, if you all agree, is over the next 5 months, every regular meeting, we take a section of our master plan and we make comments and rewrite it and open it up to the public for comments on that section, whether it be Upland, whether it be parking, whether it be Marina, whether it be North Beach. Then at the end in November, we'll have the five sections done of our master plan and we can adopt it, having five public meetings and a public hearing. I don't think it's going to be that onerous for staff. Now, one of the cons is we're in the middle of a planning process with Heartland right now that may or may not be able to be included in that, depending on how long they take. But I think it's something, RCO is really important to us. They've given us a lot of money and a lot of opportunities, and I want to make sure I stay on their good side. And having a planning document in place for next year is a good idea.
I was thinking that we had, in the past, when we adopted our budget, with the proviso that it amended the master plan to the extent the budget changed anything, this was an amendment to the master plan.
I think we were told that at WPA conference, and we attempted to include that language. So that insofar as a plan's supposed to fairly inform the public of where we're going, and as long as our plan continues to do that, mm-hmm. I think adopting it through the budget is totally appropriate, but I do have a suggestion, so I'll wait till you finish.
Well, I wasn't going too far with this, I guess, other than say I think we've done that. Whether we file that with RCO is a separate question, because I'm not sure that I was aware of that, but I know at least the first 2 years, I'm really certain that, because that's the only place I would have learned to do this, that we did have a public hearing on the master plan in conjunction with a public hearing on the budget, which was typically a no-comment situation, unfortunately. So if we ran into something that delayed us, like Heartland, or we wanted to back up and incorporate that, could we not go back to the last time we did that, file it with RCO, and buy ourselves another couple of years?
We could probably.
Because we show that we have kept it updated since 2012.
Yep. Let's look through the old minutes of when we adopted the budget, Sam, and see if there's a...
Maybe the old budget has a line, because yeah. They did give us the language at one point. Okay, here's where our suggestion...
Okay.
I think our current plan, reread the WPPA guidance on comprehensive planning. So, and you know, the basic goal was to fairly inform the taxpayers of the district nature and the extent of proposed improvements. So you're basically
extent of the
proposed improvements. And so I think our current plan gives a very good background of the port and all that information. And I think we can take it another step. Another aspect of comp planning is it can be several documents. It doesn't have to be in one document. So I propose that we could have a master plan and we could add items as they come available. It includes the basic plan. It includes the plan for the development of the Washington Avenue Park. It includes the plan for the Heartland, if that takes place, or whatever Heartland comes up with as a recommendation. And what else would be in there? Oh, Kitsap Transit Ferry Plan, when they come up with a plan for that. That would formally inform the public in very good detail of what's going to happen over the next few years. So we consider the plan as bundling those together with our current plan, maybe to debate it as it might need. But I think that's what's happening here. Those three projects is really what our improvements are for the next 2 years or more.
And is that not the capital facilities plan?
So that was just a suggestion. Yeah.
I couldn't hear.
Capital facilities plans.
Mm-hmm. So basically I'm saying as these other plans become available, mm-hmm. we add them to our master plan so that, and they're referenced in the master plan, however we do mm-hmm. that, so that it lets the public know, and all these things are going to go through public process. Actually, the park already has. Mm-hmm. So just the idea of how we could do this and incorporate in a better way than just line items.
Sure.
Okay. But I do think your idea of taking section at a time instead of trying to eat the whole elephant in one bite is a good way for us to get us to focus on the whole plan, as well as to look at what to do with it.
Yeah, at some point, maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but I'd like to have one master plan and one binder, so that it's not spread out. It's just confusing for staff and public to have a bunch of documents.
But we could do that with, you know, Appendix A is this plan, Appendix B, and then we'd all we have to do to amend it is add Appendix B.
We could do that.
I'm hearing that it's probably more common for most ports, particularly bigger ports, to have project plans in their master plan to address the specifics related to a project, to keep the public informed about those details. I think that makes sense to me, actually, to have that in that format. And I think it's more the norm.
It makes sense to me, too, but I think the only proviso I would think is to make sure when we add one of those in that we go back through the rest of the plan and see if it affects anything that we all, that is in the plan or needs to be referenced.
Unintended consequences.
Sure, we need to go back and do that.
Yeah.
And we probably should update because the timeline for the plan, as you go forward, we're into the 10-year out thing, projects like some of these projects we're doing is they're out of sync with the current timeline in the plan. Mm-hmm. So that's
I just wanted to clarify something you said, Walt, that the Heartland recommendation, are we anticipating that they're going to give us a single recommendation or a range of feasible alternatives?
Right.
And so then we'd need to make a decision about whether the range was appropriate to put in or the fact that we did this work and are looking at it.
Whatever we have, but I think it would necessarily include some overhead schematics of what type of things are, so the public would know, here's the options. I'm not saying we decide on an option, but we could put that in the plan as, here's the stuff we're considering for the upland development. So, but I think it also needs to be visual.
Yeah.
So the public can say, hey, that's what they're planning on, you know.
So you're talking about that interim period between the time when they give us a range of options and down here where we decide, okay, we're going to build a widget factory or whatever.
Sure, unless some wealthy developer drives up in the Brinks truck and says, let's go.
We can always change plans. We're flexible.
They probably should also include a, here's how we're going to make this decision in terms of the process that we're going to use in timeline. So.
I'm kind of thinking that Heartland and Kitsap Transit, and we already have the stuff for the park, produce one of their products is something we could actually put in a document to show the public what we're thinking about. So the end product is something that a regular citizen could read and say, okay, I think I understand what the options are or how the ferry is going to work or whatever.
The ferry piece may be pretty iterative.
Sure.
Yeah, so.
Sounds good.
That works for you? Okay, agenda item 7C, discussion on potential capital projects.
So here's one of those things of, oh gosh, we need to change direction. We had a very successful budgeting. We had staff go through and analyze things that they thought were going to need attention. And then things happened. The one thing we knew we were going to have to do is fuel lines in the fuel dock. And what we didn't know is just how expensive that was going to be. We budgeted $15.5 in capital project, and the lowest bid came in at $42,000. So obviously we missed, there's a $44,000, excuse me. I met with staff again yesterday and really asked them again, you know, what can be deferred, what should be deferred, and I've got everybody telling me that we really need to do fuel lines. So there's really no ifs, ands, or buts. We have one single wall of containment, so they're double wall pipes now. The new specs are triple wall pipes in case there's a spill. These are the pipes that go under the dock. The ones to the, if you look down, you'll see a manifold that we will label that manifold and valves so everybody knows what valves are for. It's from there that go under the dock and actually feed the pumps. When we had Pacific Environmental come in, they said if we're going to do this, they really recommend pulling the pumps, putting all new stainless steel cans under, because our cans are all rusted, and really do it right so it lasts another 20 years and it makes sense. So that's one option that we have for fuel line construction.
Just a question on that. Is this, the requirements were changed not that long ago. So this means brings us up to full compliance.
Full compliance.
Stuff that may have been grandfathered is no longer that. Now we're totally compliant.
Right. So this new thing will be, that new triple wall pipe is what they need. And they're replacing the entire manifold. They said it's, you know, it's 20 years old. It really needs redoing. The last windstorm we had a customer come up to the office and say your floats at the boat launch are floating away. they couldn't float away. They just came unhinged because there's piles of holding in place. But we lost a pin. The pins go into hinges. Each dock is hinged. We thought we just needed one pin. We actually got down there and inspected. All of the hinges have corroded so badly over the years from the moving back and forth that they won't hold pins. So we had AMO, who's the best person to have to do this, come out and take a look. They said they could retrofit them. The retrofit would probably cost $12,000. What they recommend is to pull them out of the water and put all new hinges on that'll last quite a few years for $20,000. So again, staff feels that that's probably a pretty good investment. All total, that is $65,000 of unplanned expenditures.
And we obviously want to do this before the boating season starts.
Yeah.
Especially the fuel lines and all.
So the fuel lines, we would be down for a week, and they thought the docks would be down for a week too. They would actually bring a crane in and remove the floats and put them in the parking lot and actually redo them in the parking lot. One of the issues we have is all the fishing seasons. We have crabbing, we have blackmouth. So we'll have to coordinate with the tribes to make sure there's not a big fish opening during that 10-day period when we might be down.
A couple of questions on the bid or the proposal from AMO Construction. Does that have to go out to bid? If this was just they came and looked at it and gave us a price?
So we did. What we do whenever we go out for a bid is we go to our small works roster on this and we choose three people that do this kind of work. So we called three people. We had two responses. One was, I think, $30,000 and one was $20,000.
So we've already gone through the process.
We've already gone through the bidding process, the small works roster process. Yeah, these are pretty small projects, but
right. We
do that for every project we do.
Okay, the second thing on the Pacific Environmental page, the exclusions, where it talks about the disposal of high-speed dispenser and hose reel, we'll still have high-speed dispensing.
Well, that was a question. This came in when we realized that the Kitsap Transit boat can't come in to be fueled, so we were actually thinking of removing that dispenser from out there on the end of the dock. And then the discussion with Puget Sound Express came up. Our thinking is we probably should keep it out there just in case someone wants to do high speed. So it wouldn't be any more,
right?
But we wouldn't get any credit for removing it.
Right. So I guess my point was twofold. One, we do want to maintain high speed dispenser because that just gives us flexibility that I don't see any good reason to not retain. And dispenser, so the hose reel would stay there with it. As a non-boater, I have to ask these questions. So we wouldn't have something left over that we were going to have to pay to dispose of.
One of the things that Pacific Environmental said we could probably sell that high-speed pump. They weren't interested in it and the reel and probably get $1,000 out of it. But obviously we should just keep it.
Yeah. And how will that affect the ability of the fast ferry to fuel there?
The fast ferry is just too big. It won't fit in the marina.
Regardless.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, the 250 passenger boat's 120 feet long, and it's, I'm trying to remember how wide it is, but it wouldn't be able to turn in that basin.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with Ruth on the high speed, because we get some pretty big boats in here that use a lot of fuel, and just for the congestion at the dock, besides attracting the business, I think it's good to be able to dispense.
We try not to use the high-speed pump just because we only have three people that are certified to use it. You have to be certified to use it. It's 33 gallons a minute. I mean, so if you can imagine dispensing 33 gallons in a minute, it's flying. So a spill would be catastrophic. So we
don't use it, or do
we don't use it now? But yeah,
so to sell 80,000 gallons a year, we'd maybe take that off.
Yeah.
I guess I need more time to think of whether we want to lose the capability or not. I can see that.
Well, this proposal would be the same whether we kept it or not. So there's no monetary difference.
And what the lines under the fixed stock, is that they being replaced too? Okay, I mentioned this to Jim earlier. I don't like the location of those lines because they're under the boarding and you can't see them. And if you think you have a leak or something, it's very difficult to walk down and see the leak because the pipes are way under there. You'd have to go in a boat and look up. And I think that's not a good way to round lines. The lines ought to be in a very visible location so that you have some potential. That's more exposed. But just ask them that question. I think it's better for those lines to be visible than hidden.
Just trying to figure out where to put them.
It's kind of like where the sewage pipes are now. If it would fit there. There's two big pipes. Right. And I just think it's a better safety thing to have them.
Certainly have them right over.
So you can find, if there's a leak, you can find it quickly and work on it quickly. Mm-hmm. But it's not a criteria, just something to tuck away when you talk to folks.
So do you have the direction you need?
I need a motion. Spend $60,000. It's way out of my price range.
In that case,
can we also, do we need part of the motion? Can you propose an amended capital budget to address the new priority?
Sure.
You know, what are we going to delay or not if we have to find $60,000? That doesn't have to be before, just later.
So do we have to amend the capital budget in this motion or basically do that as a follow-on next month?
I'm proposing the latter, or whenever the projects are due, but at some point staff gets back to us with a revised capital budget plan.
Then I'll move that we approve the AMO construction proposal for launch float repairs and the Pacific Environmental fuel dock updating as presented, and authorize executive director to sign the contracts or whatever documents are necessary to carry that out, and then at the same time direct the staff to prepare an updated capital expense budget within the next 3 months, as soon as you have the information available that will allow you to do that.
Thank
that
you.
Work?
It sounded good to me. Walt,
do we have second?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, so now you have to appropriate motion.
I will be a happy guy.
Okay, so the next item is 7D. The Kingston Farmers Market 2017 to 2019 operating agreement. Just a note, and I've already mentioned this to Jim, is their cove was an experiment a couple of years ago to try to be consistent with the branding conversation that was going on. It is Kingston Farmers Market, Kingston Cove, but that is in the cover, not in the lease itself. So
this is an operating agreement, so it's not a lease. And we've taken last year's operating agreement and modified it because it appears in excellent shape. There are a couple of changes to this, most notably that it's a three-year agreement with a two-year option. So it kind of covers them for 5 years if they so move to go that distance. We upped the rent, the 3% a year, or CPI in years following. So this rent reflected here is 3% from what they paid last year. We update it by CPIU, which Bruce and I talked about, the new UCPI.
Is that what we're, okay, it's VLS data. Where, could you please give me the name? You said CPIU.
Right.
Yeah. And what does it U stand for?
It's, isn't that everything but fuel, I think?
Yeah, there are two CPI indices that are widely quoted, and one of them is a more narrow scope. At the moment, I don't remember I gave you the data I had on that. It excludes a number of things and mostly focuses on wages, whereas the CPIU is a wider range of components that go into it more than just wages. And that is, they have different purposes for different applications. But it seemed to me that the CPIU was the most appropriate one for us, and it came about in the context of the draft yacht club lease, and I was looking at that, and there was a reference to CPI, but it was pretty vague, and when I got to digging into it, I realized that we had this discrepancy, and so I proposed to Jim that we just identify more specifically the CPI index that we're using.
For some years, I've been trying to find a PPI that works for ports. That's the producer price index, which is commonly used by businesses and industries, and over the recreational industry or whatever. And have you looked at that? Do you know anything that is close to a marine operator or a port for something like that? Mm-hmm. Pretty extensive tables.
Yeah.
Usually CPIs are used for things like wages and benefits. And,
right.
And welfare programs, things like that.
Yeah, and the U was the more universal one.
Okay.
That it didn't, I don't think it tried to narrow down on specific industries at all.
Because our costs are obviously different than a consumer's costs.
Right. Yeah.
So that's one change. If you remember a couple weeks ago, I brought to your attention, we were audited by the state auditor for leasehold tax. And it was found that the farmer's market doesn't need to pay leasehold tax because they're not renting something on a permanent basis. So the state has credited us $305, which we're going to credit to the farmer's market, $305.
It's
$363. Oh, $363. Okay. So that would be a change. So we'll just credit their lease payments, that amount of money. The other thing that came up with discussions with the team was parking, and parking is always a problem. So one of the things we did in this is we came up with a parking agreement that if a vendor wants to park, they can get a season pass for $25. It will be a hang tag for them, but it has to be used in the upper parking lot all the way up the hill. Mm-hmm. They can't use the central parking lot with that. Now, they can use the central parking lot, but they will pay our daily fee. So we're giving them an option. If you want to park and you want to reduce rate, a seasonal pass, you can go up there and park. And the group we talked with seemed to be on board with that. And I think
the farmers market
alleviate people parking in all the prime spots.
Mm-hmm. That seems like a good kind of compromise to give them the option of a seasonal parking, but it's a little bit farther away. Or they can pay full boat and park close.
Right. So other than that, those are the only changes in the agreement from last year, those two things.
Is there a motion to...
Just some questions. I didn't see the word additionally insured in the document.
Pardon?
The word additionally insured, which is a standard requirement for insurance requirements.
Yeah, page 10, page 50 of the...
Additionally named insured, great, okay,
right.
Good.
Additional named insured on such policy.
Pass that. And the other thing was, we say that they're required to comply with the rules, when you say of an attachment, but we're revising our rules. So we're going to have to work with the farmers market folks when we go forward with our new rules, so that in fact, it's if we're changing things, then we know the impact it might have on them. So, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bruce.
No, that's a good question about the rules. Did we have anything in here that says basically the fact that we can change the rules and they abide by the change rules?
I don't know what that would be, but We can certainly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't expect it to be a big issue. It's one of those
well,
things.
Well, we are a significant change coming up.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Why, as yeah. that has been written into the port rules and regulations, that, you know, all the users of port property facilities and areas are subject to the rules and regulations, you know, as approved by the commission, would that apply to our lease contract agreements as well? So could we look at it from the other side?
Mm-hmm. That should work, I think.
I think it's a little bit ambiguous. Mm-hmm. Because if you say comply with the rules and you attach the rules to the document, but then you issue new rules, which ones apply to
right.
the lease?
Right.
So I think that ambiguity needs to be clear. And I think it's going to be the ones that are in effect at the time.
We can just say current. Put a word current before yeah. rules.
Okay.
Yeah. However
mm-hmm.
we change it.
I'm sorry, what
on page 5, in sub I, market shall advise then its vendors regarding the port rules and regulations.
Mm-hmm.
We can make that clear.
Yeah, just so yeah. it fits on that, however you want to do it.
And when you mentioned, Walt, that there's big changes coming up, what specifically were you referring
well,
to?
I know, Jim, we're completely rewriting our rules. I don't think we even know the extent of the changes that may be involved. Typically, I would just say, in the big picture, our rules were written for the marina,
right.
basically,
mm-hmm.
and really not the upland. We didn't really have any rules for upland, so now we're going to be addressing that more completely, so that's what I meant by it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I think you're right. Even if it doesn't substantively change a lot of things, there's going to be a lot of changes
yeah,
to the rules.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So is there a motion to approve the operating agreement as presented with the addition? There was one addition.
Change
in the refund leasehold tax.
367. On page 3.
And adding the word current
rules.
To rules.
I think we should delete the fact that it's attached to the agreement because that may.
That's a good idea.
Because the current rules are the current rules. They don't need to be attached to the document. And then if the current rules are different when it wants to attach, then that creates ambiguity. I can't dig it out for you, but somewhere in there.
Okay.
All right.
So moved.
Second.
Any other discussion?
Are you abstaining?
I wanted to ask you if I needed to do that.
I think it's probably wise.
I'm fine to do that. My very strong belief is that if there is not a lease that is acceptable to the other two commissioners, then it needs some further work. So.
We rely on you as being a subject matter expert, however. If you see anything you don't like, we'd like to hear about that.
No, we reviewed it pretty carefully. So, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Abstentions?
Abstention? McClure. Thank you. I would like to comment that the market is keenly aware of the produce environment, which is plaguing every farmer's market in Kitsap County. I've been told by the Washington State University small farm expert and the Kitsap Conservation District Director, who are very aware of all of this, that because of the multiplicity of distribution channels now available to local produce producers, all of the markets are struggling with retaining their produce vendors. So there's a huge push, pricing, a lot of pieces of policy have been changed to make it work even better for produce vendors. And the parking is a big piece of that and is a good addition to that new package. And I think there's new blood, new energy, new vision on the Murph board at this point. And so it's clear I am not on the board. I am part of the management team on a huge paid basis of $300 a month. And I did consult with Carolyn that was not, again, recognizing abstention and stuff like that, not a conflict of interest. So.
Thank you.
You're so good. So I think the next thing is the Heartland Real Estate Visioning Sessions, agenda item 8A.
Samantha, you're on.
All right. So. Commissioners, you'll find in the little stack of goodies I left for you, we've got the grand tour. And I've been working with team members with Heartland about the real estate visioning session scheduled to take place next Tuesday, February 28th. We'll be holding two sessions here at the Village Green. Those sessions are going to run about 2 hours each. That's the scheduled, you know, time allotted. So we've got a 1 to 3 session, and then we have a 6 to 8 session. That way we can accommodate all groups and schedules. And just kind of working through things with the team, I'm going to show you guys first what our game plan is as far as outreach. You know, we're going to be investing this time and this energy, and how are we getting in touch with everybody? So as you guys were aware, postcards were created by Heartland and sent out by Heartland to a mailing list of residents, constituents in our area. That was a 3-mile radius, was it?
1,400.
About 1,400, yeah. So those went out. I was able to pick up the balance of those postcards. This is what they look like. They're awesome. Obviously, we'll have a few of these on the counter at the port, but one of the things we were talking about doing was extending that personal touch in the outreach. We had discussed that initially when talking about the plan. So I will be working with port staff. We're actually going to go out, and we're going to do a put team, and we're going to go out, we're going to canvas our local businesses. And we're just going to walk in, we're going to get that face time, we're going to get, even if it's just a few seconds, to let all of our businesses know that the port cares enough about their opinion, we're going to send our people out to personally deliver this to you. We're going to add that to it. So hopefully we'll get a nice outreach.
Could you, I hate to ask more work, but go down West Kingston Road.
I'm sorry, what won't?
Go down West Kingston Road to the immediate neighbors in case they didn't get that, because I'm talking about people within a few blocks.
Of the ones on the cove here.
Well, not all the way down. You don't have to, you know, but at least maybe up. Bannister to Bannister, and then maybe down as far as the Village Green or something. Somebody that's within, say, a block or two of the development project. Because I'm really concerned about impact on the neighborhood and hearing from those immediately affected neighbors, and you can judge what's reasonable to do. You shouldn't spend a lot of time, but like on a day when people are home, to just let people know. Sometimes people see cards in the mail and just go. But I think that's an important thing to get, because for one thing, the property is zones limited, and we may need a zoning change. And the immediate neighborhood, we need to know how they might feel about that. Okay.
Carolyn, are there any restrictions for port staff making personal introductions of residents, homes of constituents? Do we want to consider leaving a flyer if they're not home? Do we need to regulate our outreach as far as in-person standing?
I don't think you need to stick cards indoors. People aren't there. I'm just saying, okay. The personal contact. But I've done that other thing, but then you could be accused of littering.
Right.
You know? So don't.
Another thing I might suggest you do, Sam, would be to contact Ron Karsmar, who has an email group right now of all of the residents, not only on our side, this side of the cove, but across South Kingston, because there's a great interest in those that look across the bay, not with the same traffic concern, but with other concerns. And he could probably, would probably be willing, might be willing to put this notice essentially out through that email tree, which would be yet another touch to those people who live nearby.
Do you have something we can email out?
At this time,
something visual, like
I would need to create something.
Oh, well then don't do it.
And I could get Rotary to send something out, but I need something kind of visual for that to put in there. Their weekly letter, newsletter, or something. Like, yeah, okay, don't worry about it.
If I can, you know, I do need to. It jumps forward a bit, but on the Ports Promotion Strategy and Task List, you know, we've got the in-person outreach. Now we're going to try to include that one block radius or use our judgment for residents. And then, you know, event posters on port property. We were going to be creating posters very similar to our postcards, just this way and bigger, that we would laminate and mount at the head of each of our gangways. That way, anybody that's not checking voicemail, not checking email, not checking mail, it happens, is going to see it right there as they gain access to their vessels or, you know, doing business on the docks. So we'll have those available. We're also going to be creating some just smaller letter size flyers that can go up on bulletin boards everywhere from the, you know, I want to call it the food co-op, Central Market in Colesbow, you know, you get all those bulletin boards where people are going to stop and check, and that way we can extend our reach a little bit. But in that, I'm going to have to create a PDF to print it. So if I can create something that doesn't, you know, that's not 64 megs, I can maybe make something like this that can go out in an email. For the Rotary or outreach of that nature. So we've got that. We're also, we've written up just a brief press release. It's just kind of a factual, this is what we're doing, why we're doing it, and when it's going to happen. So we're, I need to contact reporters from both the Sun and the Herald to see if we can get a spot to run in print in the edition. Get that extra boost, and we'd like to invite reporters to the events themselves to provide that continuous coverage, kind of complete that circle of coverage in the local papers. So we'll be doing that as well. And then I'm in the process of completing the build on a responsive page on our site that's dedicated to the project. It's a template we can use for future projects, but it's highly interactive. You know, it's got the who, the what, the when, the where, but it also, you can click on a button and it's going to show you the details of Task 1, Heartland's Task 1 report. It'll show you, you know, there will be an interactive survey that people can take that will feed into a little chart of what people's opinions are, so people will be interested. What's the community thinking? They'll be able to get that feedback direct from our site. So I'm hoping to be able to launch that, I'm hoping by Thursday morning, it's Wednesday, by Friday morning.
You've got a lot of work to do in the next week.
Yeah. Getting it, you know, up and running. And I will send the board a link to that website. Right now it's in progress, it's password protected, it's not visible by the public. But once I get a little bit more structure in there as far as information, I'll forward you guys an email link with a password. And you can take a peek at it, and then we'll get it launched. So that's the promotional strategy side of things. And then the actual event. Included in your little bundle is, it's just a printed PowerPoint presentation that was given to us by Heartland. And it gives us an idea of what we can expect at the session. So the rooms that we're going to be using will be this space and the one behind this magic wall here. So we're going to use kind of this big room. We'll have access to the overhead speakers, you know, all the audio video if we want it. They say they don't need it, but just in case. As you walk in, we are there's going to be three stations. So you walk in, it's going to be about a half hour of just mingling, meet and greet. You guys can, you know, speak with constituents that might have any questions. Harlan will be there to help direct and focus questions and traffic. There will be three physical stations. The first one is going to be station number one. It's going to have a visual presentation, and that's going to give attendees an overview of the location, zoning, the context of the properties, other physical attributes of the sites, the factors that Heartland is using to form its opinion on feasibility. So it'll kind of detail those things. And the second little spot that people can stop at and take a peek, at board number two, the area drivers and key influences. So that's going to be that overview of the demographics, sociological and economic factors affecting the sites, things that were gleaned from, statistics and data materials that they've been gathering throughout the course of the project. It'll have a lot of great visual aids as well, so charts and graphics, things to really engage the public, and they can get a good feel. It's not just going to be a bunch of numbers. And the last spot is going to be the inspiration station. So that's where people can make a quick stop after getting an idea of, why we're doing it. And the public can actually fill out a little physical survey. That survey will be designed to match, the survey that will be available to people to take online as well. That way it jives. But people can give their input. They can give their ideas and be inspired by others, providing the same. And we'll be able to collect data that way from individual constituents. And then after that, so we do our little grand tour. And then in this little packet, you'll see the agenda. So we've got our meet and greet, view and discuss the boards. Jim will step up, and he's going to introduce the structure and intent of the visioning session. So he'll give us a little 5-minute introduction. And then we're going to do a series of breakout sessions. We're going to set up 5 tables. Round tables, and each one of us is going to get a table. Heartland will be there to assist. So we'll have Heartland reps, commissioners, Jim and I, we're all going to be there engaging, up to 10 members of the public in a round table discussion with guided questions, like, as you can see here, why Kingston, what do you like about downtown? Getting them engaged and getting them to provide feedback that helps Heartland develop a plan. So we'll be walking them through those questions, answering any questions that they might have in a 45-minute period. Then we're going to go ahead and we're going to do a report out. It's about 30 minutes. So the groups are going to reconvene, and they're going to share their respective discussions. So each person heading those tables is going to present the group's discussions, and that way everybody can compare. They can know what other people are thinking. And then it's a 5-minute presentation from Jim and Heartland to share the next steps, how we plan on utilizing the information that we're gathering at the sessions today, when to expect results of that. And then just a closing 20 minutes, some questions and conversation, mingle at will, and it's done. So that is the plan for the event.
The breakout sessions, it says that Heartland and Port staff will be facilitating those?
That is correct. So a good example of that would be, Mary, we would have you at a table with Carson from Heartland. That way the two of you can represent each side of the study to the public, answer questions, and Walt and Bruce, who each would attended a table. Jim and I would each have a table, and we would be with a Heartland rep, so that questions are guided, we're getting the information that they need, but they have that familiar face there.
So how many Heartland reps will be here?
I'm sorry, could you say it again, Walt?
How many Heartland people will
three
be here?
Yeah, all three of them will be
three.
There.
Well, so we won't have a Heartland person at each table?
No.
Are they going to rotate?
And what we'll probably do is, since Jim and I have been so heavily involved with communications with Heartland, and we're starting to think alike and have the same dreams. We'll be able to seat Heartland reps with the commissioners so that they have a comfortable, person with Heartland to help guide them.
We're going to have easels that will be writing comments on. Mm-hmm. So they'll be, this is the community's vision, not our vision. So sure, we don't really need a Heartland rep at our table.
Okay. That's okay. I just kind of was wondering. Yeah. Because I would certainly need to be coached by them on how to get what they want. Sure. Out of this thing, And I'm assuming the table picks their own rep to speak what they decided were their priorities or whatever.
We've all done it. If you've been to WPPA, yeah, they do these kind of things.
Sure,
time,
sure. So. Okay, just thinking it through. I'm sorry. I don't pick everything up on the first pass.
So you're visualizing five breakout groups.
Yeah. What I'm visualizing is, you walk in, you've got some concessions because you got to get snacks. Snacks are good. And then you've got your information stations.
The three board stations.
Exactly. So people can really see that as they walk in, that color and that tactile mm-hmm. engagement. They'll have a chance to walk around. We'll have,
something that I think helps is to say up front, here are the ground rules for the discussion. Everybody gets to talk. Nobody criticizes another person's idea, and go through a couple basics on here's how we're going to do this. Otherwise, you can have an unbalanced discussion where someone's got a really great idea, but they're not a talker, and things like that. If we could, if that was appropriate, I think it'd be helpful.
And all five groups would be given kind of the same charge. Exactly. There wouldn't be a distinction. So if we happen to have a smaller turnout than we thought, instead of having five really small groups, we're going to have three larger groups.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And we can,
play it by ear, depending on the size.
Exactly. Play it by ear. And the plan is, each round table, each group is going to have an easel with the giant post-it notes. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to go crazy with a marker and write down ideas. And then we get to take the giant post-it notes and start sticking them to the wall, just really give people a fun time, a fun way to interact and provide opinions and feel like they're engaged.
So let's imagine for a moment that I'm with one of the Heartland people. So who's writing? I mean, the roles are really important. So mm-hmm. who's the one that's writing? Is that one of us? Or
Heartland will be the writer.
Heartland, so it'll be up to the commissioner basically to run the conversation.
Well, I think that Heartland will co-run, and that's, this is an excellent opportunity. Each of you, your comfort level, what you would like to see from your co-conspirator, your Heartland rep working the table with you. If you would feel more comfortable working that marker and assisting in fielding questions or assisting participating members of the public into articulating something that kind of fits the goal of the answer. That's the role that you can take, and I can forward that to Heartland if you would prefer to just be at the table and assist in guiding, assist in keeping people on track with the answer, and Heartland posing those questions. I imagine that they would be amenable to guiding the question session as well.
I think that Heartland wants you there to listen to your constituents, not work.
Yeah,
you're going to sit there and listen more than, you're not going to be working the table.
I'm totally with you, Jim, and I think that's important, very important from another perspective. We probably have had communications with our community already on all these questions. They know where we're coming from, they know where we're going, but with Heartland's leading it, I think it's a different dynamic than talking to somebody about something you may have talked to them about mm-hmm. a week before.
I'd like to see them. Us getting up and summarizing at the what happened, I think, is an awful idea.
No,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, a leader. Yeah.
So yeah. I guess I'm thinking a strong role for Heartland and a passive role for us.
Yeah, I agree. We're
you can ask a question and write on a board.
I just want to blend in as opposed to blend out.
Yeah.
And so the primary focus in the breakout is about Kingston, and the property strength is 4 or 5 minutes of the 45 minutes. I mean, it looks as if the primary issue is Kingston.
The primary issue is that feedback, is opinion, is Kingston, is gathering, feedback from the participants. Mm-hmm.
So the Heartland people will manage each one of the stations. Mm-hmm. So they'll be answering the questions on zoning and what you can do and what properties are. So again, they will be the experts. You will be listening and observing.
Great.
That's perfect. And this is downtown Kingston, so we're trying to bound this to the area of development,
right,
as opposed to the greater Kingston.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cool.
Is there anything else we should know?
That's it. We know everything we know now.
And so the three boards and the idea station, the inspiration station, that we'll all understand that that's what people, their ideas before they had any other conversation about it.
Would you mind? So.
So the inspiration station where we want people to stand and write things is all happens in this first 15 minutes.
Exactly.
So they won't have the opportunity to hear, see, talk, or anything. So when we analyze, I mean, I'd just like you to pass this on to Heartland, and I assume they probably have thought of this, but maybe not, that what people write before the discussion is what they wrote before the discussion,
right,
not what they came up with during the course of the discussion.
Right.
It's just a different mm-hmm. different thing.
And maybe that last 20 minutes, they can go back and put down more ideas.
Yeah, we can allow that. That'd be cool. Maybe it's even got a new sheet that starts off fresh. Whatever.
Yeah, I think it needs to be. You know, we could come up with a lot of cool ideas, but when you look at the cost, risk, and investor interest, it may end up with a boring solution. Heartland may end up saying, "Well, a lot of cool stuff, but you can't pull it off, mm-hmm. you know, with the resources you have." So I just, as long as that's in the background, we're really looking for something that a small port can pull off.
Remember, they're scheduled to come back 2 weeks later with a report.
Okay.
I got all this information. Now I'm going to run those numbers, and then I'm going to come back and say, here are three alternatives that I think are reasonable, mm-hmm. and report back to those same people if they can.
Okay, good, good. Because there is this element of, you know, the Ferris wheel might not be something we can do.
Cool idea, but it might not work.
But if we come up, if the only thing we can afford to do is something that falls so far short of what mm-hmm. would be valuable in Kingston, we should look for somebody else to buy it and do it
sure.
themselves.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which I guess is to say that I don't want to do something crummy in those, at those properties.
Yeah.
Well, we are going to protect the shoreline probably better than a commercial developer if it's our project, so there is that.
Okay, so is there further discussion about the Heartland sessions?
The only question I have is whether their 2 week later date is set, and we should book it.
Oh, good, because you're coming away.
I don't have the chart with me.
Just the chart,
Sam.
Just the chart.
I don't have the chart.
Is that the newest one though?
That's one we got at the last meeting.
Yeah. So they set it up for.
Maybe now we do need that. Interior light.
Right.
So the first week in March sometime, they have it set for, but that's too early. So we're probably going to be looking at the last week in March. So
the last week in March? Rather than the first week in March?
Well, we won't be able to make the first week. I mean, 28th March, that'll
yeah.
be 2 days later. So it's going to have to be 2 weeks after.
Sometime mid-March, okay. Yeah, if you could let us know as soon as
you
get that date. I don't leave till late April.
Okay. Okay, again, no public comment?
Okay.
Great. Executive Director report.
I didn't realize I was after. So you've had this report for a couple days now, but just briefly, covered mortgage is going well. Sea Level's already started working on the uprights. They've ordered all the parts. And once all the parts come in, it's going to go relatively quickly. The hard part is fabricating everything that they're doing on their plant. The Carpenter Creek project, we met with the Mott McDonald staff. We walked the estuary in the pouring rain. They will have their report to Carolyn by, I'm hoping, Friday afternoon. So you'll have at least a day.
Okay.
Yeah, because Tuesday's the deadline, right?
Yeah. So
Tuesday is the deadline for the second one.
Right.
For the first one.
So I'm going to try to get you pieces of it, and I'll forward it to you as soon as it comes across my desk so you can see. But they called me today, and they said they're kind of on track to get something by the end of the week to us finalized.
And just let me expand on that. That's a deadline to appeal. And so we can appeal without the consultant's report being final. It's just having the strength of that going into the appeal, and that will help us judge whether we have the grounds to move forward.
Okay.
So we would have to decide by Tuesday whether to appeal?
Oh, yeah, that's the appeal deadline.
So
there's no harm, no foul in appealing and then withdrawing it.
That's where I was going. So should we discuss that in our executive session?
We can.
Okay. The office building plans were submitted to the county. They're telling me 22 days for a permit, and I'm holding them to it. So in 2 weeks, I should have an office building permit. We'll see how that all works. One of the things that a citizen came to me and doesn't like our design and would like that design to be, he wants more drawings and more visual presentations for the community to decide what the building is going to look like. His comment was he doesn't want us to build a shed. I feel we're going to have a beautiful building, but if the commissioners would like me to delay this project and go back to design, I'd be happy to do that.
Does the current design meet the Kingston downtown design standards?
Well, it has to pass permitting.
No, it doesn't necessarily.
But
not a hard requirement. It's guidelines, and you don't have to. Well, let me give you some background. The pushback was when we built the storage shed, on near the pad, we didn't follow the downtown design standards, and there were people that were concerned about that, and. These are guidelines. They're not hard. You don't have to. Sometimes permitting reviews against them. But I'm just asking, have we even looked to see whether it's...
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, again, this is an addition. It's not a new building.
I understand.
So we're kind of retrofitting a building. But you've gotten the plans. You've seen what it looks like. I think one of the things we're restricted to is 3,000 square feet total. So that's how we arrived at 900 square foot addition. We couldn't go any more. We would have to go into a substantial shoreline development permit. So our architect was very keen in saying, this is all the space we can give you, or it's going to take you a year to get a permit. So we don't have a lot of options. But we can review it if the commission so desires.
Did the individual have any specific issues, items he or she didn't like?
Wants to see more visual options. But architects are expensive, and if I'm starting to do three or four different versions of a building, we're going to spend quite a bit of money doing that.
And I'm sure some people would like to see a Taj Mahal down there, but I just don't. Given the restrictions, the limitations of what we could do there, I think you've squeezed an awful lot out of that space, and having the windows and the light and the open area and being able to make better use of the upstairs and not having to redo the bathrooms and all the plumbing that's inherent there. I think we could end up with a horse designed by a committee that we couldn't afford to do anyway, and we'd be back to where we are now.
We're following the same architectural style as the current building, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not like, if you don't like the current building. So I would, where I am on this is, unless there's a specific comment, a specific issue on something that's not right with the plans, I'm not interested in changing the plans. But if somebody knows of something that's clearly, to the reasonable person, wrong with the plans, and I'd like to hear it, but a general thing of, it's kind of like I can't tell you what I want, but I can tell. I'll know it when I see it. Type of thing, you know.
And so pay $300 an hour to just keep making pictures.
Yeah, keep making pictures till you find something I like.
Because I'm thinking, unless someone can come up with a specific thing that's not correct.
There is one specific thing I've heard, and that is, three different people have commented that, is the planting, the raised planting bed going away? And I said, I don't think so. And but that spoke to me that maybe we could do a ground view drawing that was pretty conceptual, that could just show people what, not from the plan sketch, but from a finished sketch, what it might look like. Is that inexpensive?
We'll price it out and see. Okay. It should be. But we're not really destroying any planters. We're literally taking just a chunk of grass out of it.
Yeah, building up on the grass.
But we're ready to go. We're ready to pull the trigger on this. So.
Yeah. And the comments I got at the last chamber board meeting, there was a question about the area there where we can have the garage door pulled down to have the brochures and pamphlets. And they thought that was a great idea. And I thought that's a very nice addition to the building.
I was walking off the ferry with Terry McLeod, mm-hmm. you know, and he saw the lines. He said, "What's that?" And I explained it to him. He said, "Okay, looks good." So didn't really bring any bells with him. So
all right, well, we'll just move forward and see if we can work with the individual.
So where it says, "However, we can stop the permitting process." It was loud and clear, no.
I got the direction to keep trudging through.
Right.
Okay.
Well, if there's any showstoppers that this person has, let us know. I'm sure you would anyway.
The bank loan's going well. Everything's approved. We've contracted with Cynthia Weed, bond counsel. She's drawing up paperwork. I'm hoping to have that paperwork done in the next 2 weeks, so we may want to call a special meeting for you all to sign that paperwork. Cynthia is willing to come here and actually make a presentation to you about the bond.
So, can we turn one of our work sessions into a special meeting?
Sure.
Okay.
And with Cynthia, we're still at that $5,000 in fees, Mark?
Yeah. Okay. Yacht Club lease negotiations are going really well. Bruce has been through it once. I rewrote it. I gave it to the Yacht Club to review. They're kind of happy with it. There were some tweaks that we made. I will send out another copy to you, Bruce, so you can see the direction we're going, and then they want to take it after that to their board.
Could we see that as well?
Yeah.
I mean, just in case there's something.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In there, I suppose Carolyn's been reviewing this all along.
I'm using my picky mind when I go through.
I understand. Big picture. You're the lawyer. I'm take my boating mind.
Yeah, I'll send it out.
Just in case there's something in there that we know from previous experience.
But I think we're moving in the right direction, and I think we're going to solve some parking issues that we had. I think that we're going to make everybody happy in this parking lot. That's my goal, to make everybody happy with parking.
You know, when I think about Port Townsend, Kingston, I think, you know, you actually have the opportunity to make everybody happy on a pretty fundamental level.
It's pretty fun to do that, too.
Yeah.
Farmers Market Agreement, thank you for the approval on that. We'll make those changes and move that forward. Two of you were at the County Port Transit meeting. I thought it was a good meeting. It went in a different direction than I thought it was going to go. It was very ferry-centric. I was a little shocked that the Kitsap Transit decided they don't want to use our dock. Or at least they only want to use our dock when they want to use our dock, and then they're going to move somewhere else. It was an interesting meeting, but I understand some of the things. But I talked to Commissioner Elliott after, and I think you're right on, Walt, that could change when they see trying to fit those three boats in the Washington State Ferries.
I just know State Ferries is going to be resistant to sharing their facilities. Meantime. And I can think of lots of reasons for that.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't change the traffic flow. Just for your information, Bruce, one thing they talked about is bringing the buses down and turning left at Washington Boulevard in front of the crepe shop, and then circling down through the employee entrance and dropping off at the
drop-off place. And so they could bring the buses down to the waterfront.
And then exiting back through the same
correct,
way.
Correct. That was a big discussion item.
Well, Jim told me yesterday at the luncheon that they were saying they weren't going to use the Verlaine and RDoC, and I wasn't really surprised because I kind of smelled that coming a few months ago. But it does, I two things. One, I feel a little bit misled by them. I think John could have been more honest with that several months ago, but I think he may have been afraid we wouldn't support him as much. We wouldn't support the ballot as much if we thought that wasn't going to be used. I don't think that's the case. I think we would have supported it anyway. But I think whether they want to use it temporarily or whether they ultimately end up wanting to use it permanently, we need to start thinking about what are we going to do with that independent of their decision, because that's an asset of ours that is grossly underused right now. And I'm a little concerned that those Cormac boxes holding all that moisture in there is not good for the underlying wood structure. And that's something we need to look
Jim
at.
Jim told me that they're not going to have the bow loader for the first year of operation here. So that means if they want to operate off their lane, they're going to have to fix that Cormac box gangway. So I think we would benefit from their use of a year, because right now it's not suitable for passengers, and I think we would get a free upgrade if that's what you want to look at it.
Yeah.
So that helps, I think. But it's a big question mark whether they're going to be able to run bow loaders in out of state.
Yeah, I've got my doubts about that too. But like you said about something else, that's their problem, not ours.
Mm-hmm. And one last thing. Steve Young has been meeting with me on a regular basis. He really wants to push through a port advisory committee. And I've agreed to do it, but it's not going to be a commission-sanctioned advisory committee. It's going to be six members of the public talking to the executive director and giving him ideas that he can take to the commission for their approval. There will be no minutes taken. No recordings, it's just some citizens and I talking. I wanted to give you a list of people. Dave Wetter is going to be on that. Anna Moore is going to be on that. Tony Clark, Art Hammond, Butch Brown, Craig Powell, and Johnny Walker, plus Steve Young. I think it's a good balanced group. I've agreed to do it for a year. We're going to do it monthly for a year at the Yacht Club. First meeting is going to be March 20th. So I'll report back on how that goes.
I'm skeptical. I think we need to do a pilot program on a specific project. So I think rather than agreeing to a year, you could have them to take input on the port development plan and do that and see how that goes, and then maybe expand from that. But to commit to an ongoing process, I think, establishes an interest group, I guess, a lobby interest group, which are we treating them the same as every public citizen? So I appreciate the idea, but when Steve told me, came up with the same idea, let's start off with a fixed start-stop thing. So I would encourage you to say you really want to get input on this and, this, and hear what they have to say, and then you have a start and a stop. I mean, I heard it go good, but then I've heard of groups like that suing their ports.
Mm-hmm.
So... I would encourage you to make it a fixed duration, fixed project thing to see how it works. And then if it's really great, then talk about continuing.
Well, their intent is, I don't think, talking about development. Their intent is, do we charge for electricity on the docks? It's going to be very operational centric, and I think they want an ear that talks about, because it is boater centric.
Yes.
And
it's yacht club centric as well.
And I don't have a problem listening to them. If any other group wants to form, I can certainly give time. But I certainly appreciate, having meetings every day with different citizen groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to the extent, if it lightens your load of having, six people come in at once a month instead of six people come in twice a week, that's a plus. I hope they don't come into it with the feeling that they can dictate how we're going to do things, because the decision of whether or not we charge for electricity or what our rates are is not going to be set by an interest group.
I'm still uncomfortable. Can you make it a meeting that's open to anybody who wants to show up?
I just don't want to make it a public meeting where we have to take minutes and do all
that. No, I'm not talking about a public meeting, but a closed interest group. It's still, I'm a little bit uncomfortable with it. I think when you have the chamber meetings and you have even stakeholders, people are allowed to show up who may have an interest.
I have no problem. So, it's not a closed door meeting. So it's at the Yacht Club and we can just announce it that this is time. One of the.
Come something like that.
I was thinking of Washougal. Doesn't Dave have a lunch? Come and have lunch with Dave, and he just goes and has lunch with
whoever shows up. Yeah. I've heard of other ports doing it. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
So I think maybe if it's along that line, it's a little bit.
Yeah, if you have a regular cast of characters, but it's billed as lunch with, coffee with the director, and others can feel free to drop in.
I think. Using that opportunity to talk about the properties and the Heartland process really potentially throws a kink in the Heartland process. They wouldn't be part of it. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, gives them a whole lot more special treatment than a bunch of boaters coming in talking about their issues around the boat ramp. So I...
I can see that. Although, we've got to do outreach on the Heartland project anyway, and whoever has I know Dave has been very involved in property development or downtown development. So I don't know about the others, where they're coming from on this thing. Dave doesn't have a boat in the marina, for example.
Doesn't have a boat in the marina, nor does Tony.
Yeah, so I guess it could be a broader thing, but I see other people on this. I guess I'm a little gun-shy, that's all, from prior experience. And well, from what I've heard from other ports, that we've got to be careful.
Could you make it just 6 months? Would that have
I kind of like the idea of, okay, we want to talk about a specific decision we have to make and we're getting some input. But, I don't know. I thought we should have guidelines in place before we had public advisory bodies. And so that... My impression, and I don't want to presuppose what you might say, Bruce, and you did a great job and did the best you could on POFAC, but one of the problems is there wasn't a clear understanding of how it was going to work, and the result was a hostile relationship at the end. So going into a process, I think how this is going to work is very important to vet. And so I think the guidelines should be upfront, and here's how we work with a advisory body, and I think whether you say the board sanctions it or not, it's sanctioned if you're holding it. So if it's going to be a board advisory body, I'd be more comfortable with an upfront standing of how it's going to work. And is there an urgency here, or they have a specific?
Well, they've been trying to do it for a year almost, ever since I started.
Uh-huh.
Steve's comment to me was, well, the port's been around 100 years. I guess we can wait a couple more weeks. But
I guess I'd rather see some guidelines on
how
it's
going to work. What would you anticipate the guidelines covering?
I've researched this, so I can give you a whole bunch of things on how that is. But I have to think through that. You know, I didn't come prepared to stress that.
And the end of the spectrum, to be remembered, is that it's copy with the executive director, director's right, that there's no minutes, there's no Open Public Meetings Act requirements associated. If there's any kind of sanction from the commission, the more it gets to, all right, now it has to be minuted, has to be open public meetings, has to be public notice, all those things.
You know, the more formalized we make it, the more we tread into that area more. Sure. So I think if Jim has it clear with this group that this is, you know, coffee with me, and when you speak, you're not speaking for the commission, and when they speak, they're not speaking to the commission. It's, you know, you want to hear from people. I guess, you know, it's having, as you pointed out a minute ago, Walt, the clear expectations, because that was a big problem with POFAC.
Yeah.
And then Jim gets the joy of making sure that these people's expectation is set in the right area, and not, I can visualize a couple of those people having rather lofty expectations.
I'm hearing you say, don't put out any guidelines. Is that correct?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that I'm just saying there's two complete different ends of the spectrum. So if it is a walk-in, have coffee with the executive director, you know, just as Commissioner McIntyre said, make it very clear that this is not a committee. It is open to all public. It's not, you're not addressing the commission. You have no heightened voice over any other citizen who would come speak at a public hearing or a meeting of the commission. Versus if the commission says, I want an advisory committee that report back to us on such and such items, and here's their bylaws, and here's their structure, then that.
Okay, so I suppose the guidelines that Carolyn said first are what my expectations are. Okay, something along those lines.
Yeah.
But it's got to be clear that the public's invited and it's well announced. So anyone who wants to talk to you about whatever.
Yeah, and you could note it on the calendar on the website as coffee with the executive director. So everyone's advised of it, but it's
so it's
not.
The public gets, knows that they can come to this, and, you know, meet with Jim, Jungle Jim. King of the Port.
Remember that.
Yeah. Okay.
I didn't say it.
Okay, just, I guess.
You know what happens to kings when they get deposed, don't you?
Okay, said too much.
Hey,
you got it. You better provide coffee.
Okay. So did you get everything you needed from that discussion?
I did.
And did we get everything we needed from that discussion?
I'm comfortable with what was said.
So that leads us to commissioner reports.
I can cover a couple of things. One is just some interesting metrics from the chamber on the Kingston Cove Christmas lighting event. They were working on crowd estimate, and they got, they'll just run through their numbers quickly. They got two independent estimates from organizers, one of 1,500 people, the other of 2,000, conservative, 3,000 high side. They used 1,000 cups for cocoa and alcoholic drinks. So there's one metric. And that doesn't include the vendors, you know, who are outside there selling drinks. So by that estimate, they're figuring overall attendance of 2,000 people. They also did a thing where you put a bead into a bowl based on where you were from. Different color, I forget if it was different color beads or different color bowl. But from that, 55% of the beads were from Kingston, 26 were from Kitsap County outside of Kingston, and 19% were outside Kitsap County. So that's a good, you know, basically 20% draw from outside the county. They also did a zip code email collection there, independent of the beads. Their zip code analysis was 62% Kingston, 22% Kitsap County, and 16% outside Kitsap. Pretty consistent with what they got from the beads. So from that, they extrapolated 1,150 people from Kingston, 480 from Kitsap County outside of Kingston, and 380 outside Kitsap County. Those are good numbers. They had 141 email addresses from 25 different zip codes. Linwood, Shaw Island, Seattle, Marysville, Mukilteo, Redmond, Chehalis, Mount Vernon, Kirkland, Edmonds, Tacoma, Milton, Issaquah, Port Ludlow, Port Angeles, Port Hedlock, Poldo, Indianola, Bremerton, Bainbridge, all the one around here. So I think that gives a really, they're going to use it, of course, in going for their LTAC grant work. But I think that gives us a pretty good picture of how many people were there, where they came from. And I wish there had been an opportunity to present that to the volunteers yesterday, but maybe Ray can use that in his kickoff meeting. You realize they're going to start doing lights again in 2.5 weeks?
Yeah,
March 17th, they start up again. They've had a month off, so back
to work. Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
But they might appreciate having that information. I'll give this to Jim afterwards and pass it on. The other thing I was going to, it's an issue of not necessarily a report, but to raise. Cover your ears, Carolyn. Our general legal services agreement is almost a year old. So I went back to kind of look at some of the numbers to see, you know, is the $3,000 a month retainer agreement, is that working out for us? And I couldn't remember from Carolyn's, from the Goodstein Law Group's proposal, what the hourly rate would be if we didn't have the $3,000 monthly.
I can check.
So what I did was I said, well, what if it had been $250 an hour, which I thought was probably in the ballpark. And then I took, Juanita gave me the actual hours we used each month since last February, or last April. And I just took all those hours at a flat $250 rate. And the difference over the period of not quite a year, we used an average of just under 13 hours a month. And the difference, we would have paid about, you know, $2,200 less over that 11-month period. So I don't have a conclusion or anything at this point. I'm just putting it out there for us to think about, and I'm hoping our legal fees will be less next year than they were over the past year. And the question that we'll have to address at some point is whether we want to go to a straight hourly rate or stay with our 15 hours for $3,000 rate. And that went up, or will go up here shortly, as I recall.
I think the contract provides for the 3%.
Yeah, something like that. I've got a copy of it here, and I saw that.
But bright minds think alike, because I prepared exactly the same chart.
We will pass that down, Carolyn.
My plan was to send it to Jim, because I too wanted to just check and see, you know, because you know our proposal is meant to be a fair one and one that provides consistency, but also where you're getting, you know, you're paying for your bucks. So it's great. I can share mine with Jim.
Yeah, it's just we're coming up towards that year, and so it was time to start looking at it.
Why didn't you tell me it was up at the end of the year?
I looked at the agreement and it says December 31st of this year.
So it goes through the end of 2017.
Right, but there is a provision in it that we can review it after 1 year.
Okay. Yes, because of the fixed rate.
Right.
Gotcha.
So that's... Oh, I know one other thing I was going to raise and think about, and that is our 2016 list of priorities. We had that wish list that we put together right at the start. I think one of our now Tuesday morning meetings, planning meetings, we want to maybe take a look at that and figure out where we are and where to go and what to add to it. But it's something that we haven't revisited for a while.
Sure.
I think we should.
Very good. I think our ethics thing stalled out at the 90% point, didn't it? And it was just about ready to go, and we didn't pick it up again. And so I think there's stuff that we need to do.
Yeah.
I'll bring it to the meeting Tuesday, next Tuesday.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Good.
Okay, I'm done.
See, I was at the meeting with Mary and Jim, and I think Jim kind of covered it. A couple notes, I think. I think they were very fuzzy about the non-bus ferry traffic flow. It was kind of Kitsap Transit saying, well, we'll be doing an EA later when we do it. So the whole issue of the kiss and ride drop off to people circulating through our lots, how does that work? Kitsap Transit was very fuzzy about, although I think they acknowledged it, that someone needs to be thinking about this. They were just focused on how their bus, shuttle bus from the 91 bus, or maybe the 92, is going to get to ferry riders. So I think we need more on traffic flow for vehicles other than buses. And so that was one of the things. The timing of the project sounds like they should be able to execute in time for us to execute under our RCO grant. And an advantage of their executing prior would be they will buy the wedge. They will find somehow what to do about the wedge in a manner.
That's the raising the...
No, this is that wedge of property that comes down. Yeah. And if that is acquired, then we can develop our park and it will be transparent to that. Otherwise, we got a wedge of broken asphalt maybe in the middle of it. So I think that will benefit.
So they're going to...
They're talking about that. They're working it.
That'd be great.
So that'll make our park more of a continuous project. Than there was a lot of discussion about the dirt, and Jim can give us those details, but I think that's beyond what we need here. We started talking about dirt, and so I guess that's kind of it for that. I don't know if there's anything else. Did point out that the parking by Drifters has no public parking signs anymore. Somehow they took that down. So I just pointed it out to the public works guy. And then I went to the meeting on a task group meeting on a monument, electronic monument sign to be out at Lindbergh Road. I'm involved both in it's Rotary and then Parks and Trails Committee. Actually, it was Parks and Trails Committee. So that project is moving forward. They estimate a $40,000 cost. I think they have half the money raised. It'll be used for non-commercial advertising. I think there's some strings there that if you're putting this up on public property or public county right away, then they're limited to that. They didn't ask the port to contribute, but they're looking for contributions. And maybe there's a way we can help out there. The issue is that, Carolyn, if you don't know, we only have one really major sign that people, this is a posting we put up announcements. It's on about a 30-foot pole. It hangs out over the highway. And it's dangerous to change. It's hard to change. And now the property was turned over to Coffee Oasis, so we can't. So we really don't have a way of announcing public events or public things. And there may be something that the port could do to help announce our events and maybe some justification for us helping in the project. The deep background is that high school put up an electronic sign. Everybody said gag. And then the county came up with sign ordinances to cover the signs. But there is a sensitivity about gaudiness and all that sort of stuff. So I went to that meeting, and that's...
Is the issue that the chamber will still run it?
The chamber will probably run it.
The chamber had some discussion about that, too. They're not sure how they would run it, but I think what they're leaning towards is a group that sets the guidelines and
yeah,
monitors it. And
that sounds like what I heard. This will have the ability to run the program from just about any location. So they could do it from their prayer chamber office. It's a rolling. So,
One thing they talked about the other day was just that issue of where could they program it from. The one they were looking at for the price point that was under discussion the other day, they wouldn't have the range to reach it from their office. But you could just drive up and park there in the lot in front of the Nava store, for example, and type in the changes. So it'd be remote, but
I think they've worked through that.
Have they come through that now?
The vendor briefed, and he said basically, I think it's probably using cell phone connectivity or something like that. So,
okay. So
I think they can do it from everywhere now.
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't think, I didn't say not the port would do it, but they're volunteers.
But if the chamber's involved, it would make it easier for us to participate in that program than if a private individual or someone else.
Yeah, well, Rotary's leading it, but they're all there. So maybe you could talk to Colleen about that and how you might help in the project. But again, they're just a participant. It's kind of a coalition, so...
And yeah, I think that was one of the issues, was who would own it.
Who would own it, and also making sure you have good talk about setting expectations, making sure you have good guidelines about what kind of things are going to be posted.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
I think they'd just like to have our money. But if we can help out, I think it's a good cause for Kingston, and a lot of events happen on port property. But I'll leave that to you to talk with Colleen, but I'm going to those meetings because Mark... Libby and I are parks guys.
I'd like to go too, but I just couldn't. Know
It wasn't much for the port there because it's not on our property. It's a distance away, and it's not good use of your time, I don't think. But
It'll be a standing vote until the sign goes up, and I expect it'll be up this year.
Anything else, Walt?
No.
Okay. The one thing I thought would be, I mean, I was obviously at the same meeting that you were at, and you were at. I was intrigued by the Kitsap Transit's surprise over the fact that the buses really couldn't reasonably come down into the parking lot. It was like, have you ever walked there before? Anyway, my sense was they're so focused on Bremerton right now that we need to keep bringing stuff to them that they need to deal with, and expect that on anything we don't need to know right now, they're going to put us off, and just because they're sort of exploding inside. The other thing that I wanted to just let you know about is that the focus group process project that I talked with us about doing earlier, I am going ahead and doing that. I'm scheduling it so that it comes after the Heartland outreach, so that people are not confused over who's doing what, and so that the community discussion will already have been started about those properties, but looking at those as not specific to those, it's really much more about Kingston overall. And I have a lot of good response from kind of a sponsor group, and I'll let you know about that at some point, just so you're not surprised when that's a little more final. So just wanted you to know.
So you'll have a sponsor group sponsoring instead of the port sponsoring.
Right. And I did consult with Carolyn about it, and as long as I am very clear that this is not a port initiative, it's not a port project, and I'm just going to say we've got a lot on our plate, so that's, we're not doing this, but I am. So that's where that is.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Good luck. Break a leg, they say.
So, staff comments. I saw there was a really cool little sheet here.
I didn't type up a little thing, sorry. This is my stuff. This is the clock.
It's a
process.
Dangerous precedent you set, Sam.
I know. This is the cross-talk that I've been doing here every month. Again, it doesn't include any of the boat launch, boat ramp stuff yet. We haven't had anything to expense.
Perplexed on 1 hour a week on the park. I mean, I see Ray and those guys working around on the grounds all along.
And
is
the,
that correct?
The dollars is $4,300, so I'm not getting the 4 hours versus $4,300.
Yeah. The guys are working on the grounds all the time.
Well, this is January. They're working a lot on the...
Even January, I don't know. Something seems strange about that.
And a lot of it, they forget to write their hours down, so we have to guess.
Well, so much of it was Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the Christmas hours of 229 hours, that was really what they were doing.
So that takes taking down the lights and all.
Yeah.
So that's what this reconciliation, the 4288 mm-hmm. includes park and Christmas. Okay, right.
Gotcha.
But an hour a week for all our grounds, North Beach, going out to the property we own, that's basically a park because it's fenced and all. I think there's something not right about that number. I mean, just from what I see when I walk around.
Well, it's the honor system of reporting.
So yeah. Right. Well, it could be communication.
You have to get up the guys
that.
And make sure they're...
Yeah, they're I'm just observing.
Yeah, that's a good catch.
You know, what I see on the land. Yeah.
And the lease time is mostly Jim's time rather than staff time, or...?
No, not necessarily. If they're doing fixing the ceiling in the yacht club because it was leaking, or they're doing something...
Hope we're fixing the roof, not the ceiling.
Yeah. Well, they actually have to fix the ceiling because the roof is leaking.
Oh, all right.
So, but yeah, anything we do to the lease properties. And the Hill House took quite a bit of time, too. So
yeah, that's true. I didn't know that.
But you're right. 4 hours for park doesn't sound right. But get after
Parks is all the grounds from North Beach down to West Kingston Road, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Hope they're spending more than 4 hours a month.
Hey, if they're getting all that done in 4 hours,
yeah,
right?
They do a heck of a job in 4 hours, I'll tell you.
Well, I have to assume that the 4 hours isn't really reflective because I can't imagine Ray not making sure that everything that needed to happen in the park happened. So,
yeah. Yeah. And they did a lot of
work.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's a work in progress.
Yeah. Very cool.
But the other thing I have to report is the report for the leasehold tax audit that we just.
Who's Gary Johnson?
Oh, he was a
long time
long ago.
Like in the 90s.
Yeah.
He was. Yeah, I think he preceded Mike. Bookie, Gary Johnson.
So, the basic of it, we are going to get a $182 check back. $363 is going to go credited to the yacht club. We were being for the Sailing Kings and Co. We mm-hmm. take the leasehold tax out of that. And that would.
$192. That was in 15, though, not in 16. 16, they paid
the sole
tax. Mm-hmm. It was just 1 year we got down.
You told us about this.
Okay. Juanita, can you tell me those numbers again? I'm looking at, I guess, the fourth page here, or just... Yeah, Schedule 1. The excise due for unreported on contract rent for SKC, and then credit for leasehold reported an error of 171.
171 is the total. We're getting back to 363 for the Kingston, sorry, the farmer's market. And the 192 is what we were getting or not the sales.
Okay, so the farmer's market doesn't get $363 credit, it gets 171 credit?
The 363.
That's why I'm confused. I thought the 363 was Sale Kingston Coal.
It is, but we didn't pay the leasehold tax for Sale Kingston for the
right.
year, and so we have to pay it. So
right.
What we have to pay minus the what we have credited for comes to 151.
So the 192 is what Sale Kingston Cove we owe on that.
Right.
The 363 is what we owe back to the market.
Right.
And the net to us is the 171.
Yes.
Okay. I was reading those numbers differently. Thank you.
Yeah. The other two pages are just more detailed of how he came up with the numbers compared to Schedule 1.
Okay.
Hmm.
Okay, my turn. On page, on schedule 2, where it says math 1, math 2, tax total. What does that mean?
Schedule 1?
Schedule 2.
Oh. And I'm sorry,
where it says math 1, math 2. In
I think that's just to, it says internal use. I think that's just his calculations. Equal, okay, before he's ready to go.
Alternative math.
Yeah.
What do they call that, the new math?
Yeah.
You're right, alternative math.
I hate to ask this question. If we don't collect $192 from Sale Kingston Cove, are we in violation of the Constitution by giving them a gift?
Do we have no other compensation that we get from them?
We do.
We've worked it out a deal where we take, was it 3/4 of the rent in basically in advertising, take it out in trade, and they pay about $750 a year.
I think you probably make a case that they help maintain the floats.
Well, I think we can make a case to go back to them and tell them that we have to collect leasehold tax because we've got an audit. I think they would be fine with that $192.
Mm-hmm. I'd hate to get audited again and get slapped again.
They know the situation, so I would think that they would do it. Even though you hate to take that much money away from them, they understand.
I think we should probably talk to them in the same breath about, can they document the hours that they spend in general flow payments as opposed to their specific stuff? Because I'd like to encourage them to do work down there, and just like volunteers keep track of those hours, maybe we can use that for some purpose, maybe in a grant writing or something else, or maybe in something like this. We could have them give us a summary. And I don't mean stuff just for their program. I'm talking about sort of the general stuff.
Thank you, Bonita.
Thank you, yes, thank you.
So additional staff comments. I attended my first NKPC board meeting on February 9th. It was rainy, it was weathery, it was a very small meeting, there were three of us. But at least we had a nice chance to make introductions and get an idea of where each person is coming from and what our goals are going to be. Also went to the NKTC Marketing Committee meeting on the 16th. The committee is honing in on events to promote by city for 2017, and that is these events will be featured on the Sanctuary Shore website. Great Cross promotion. Kingston's going to be promoted through Kingston Cove Yacht Club's Kingston opening day of boating event scheduled for May 13th. And then the Listen to Your Art Festival scheduled for July 9th. And annual Kingston Cove Country Christmas. That is subject to change, but at this time that is what we have submitted.
On KTC, who's taking the lead on that now? Because as I understand it, Nancy Langwith has stepped away from that.
She's still participating in the marketing committee, okay. But she has stepped off of the board. We have Pete from associated with Fort Campbell and Olympic Property Groups, I think it is, or Olympic Property Management. Mm-hmm. But he is president of the board.
Just the statement, Kingston will be promoted through an opening day event, which I don't recall us having last year, not with the Seattle one, maybe it's a separate one. And these, we have a lot more events than these. like 4th of July and things like that, so the Concert on the Coast series. So I'm kind of thinking this is a little out of sync with a lot of what happens on the Port property.
These are LTAC events. So these are events that would promote visitors' overnight stays. You know, things like the Christmas event, the Follow Your Art Festival, the Listen to Your Art Festival, opening day of boating. There's a chance of promoting those LTAC conditions.
LTAC being?
Oh, gosh.
Lodging tax.
Lodging tax.
Lodging tax.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's we looked at all of the events. You know, what's going to be best used to promote Kingston, you know, as a whole, event-wise, something that people are going to click on that button and get codes for, you know, local Airbnbs so they can participate, you know, things of that nature. So.
I appreciate that. But remember, it's the longest-running 4th of July parade west of the Mississippi. Just, we've got some pretty big events here and important to Kingston. We put a lot of effort into. So I just encourage them to consider that what we're doing for the North End with those type of events. You know, and I'm trying to think of others, but I guess Concert on the Coast, you don't spend the night unless you drink too much. But
and a specific piece of feedback on the LTAC. And Airbnb, and there's a lot of conversation about, oh, promote Airbnb. Last year, the stuff that was supposed to be distributed through Airbnbs was a brochure that I actually got days after the event.
Oh.
And which, so you need to get it in people's hands earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You need to realize that it actually, that unless you can provide something that people can put on their Airbnb website that works easily, click, click, then it's useless for Airbnbs. It might be good for others, but for Airbnbs, people see your Airbnb list, and then they arrive, and if it wasn't on there, it didn't have any role in
bringing
them.
And
that's the whole LTAC thing, is
yeah,
how you bring people.
Yeah. And based on what I've been gleaning from the meetings, is, you know, this was my third
yeah,
one
yeah.
so far, but it seems like that was something they took away from last year. That was something
yeah.
that they picked up on.
Yeah.
And Nancy's actually going to be coordinating the outreach to Airbnbs in the area just to get a feedback. You know, is it something that, do you want to be featured? And what it'll be is when people go to look at events on the Sanctuary Shore, let's say it was an event on Bainbridge Island and people were looking at staying at the casino hotel out there, they could click on that event, and when they click on that event button, it's going to take them to participating hotels, participating,
oh, okay,
and then they
can
get a code, but you know, Airbnbs, for instance, that would be interested in participating on that events page will be listed as promoted
okay. Cool.
places to stay, so... All right. And then the Kingston Open Day Committee, both Jim and I attended that meeting. And that was the first one. And, you know, it's mostly yacht club. And there's a Sail Kingston Car representative. You know, there were a lot of people there to give feedback and start to build the idea of what do we want to do. There was a lot of discussion on pretty much just that, you know, events, attractions, a very light touch on logistics, but, you know, that's why Jim and I attended, was the logistics portions, if people are going to be boating in, if people are going to be wanting to utilize the park for events, things of that nature. So our next meeting, is that the 27th, Jim? We go back to our next meeting? You know, we're going to be assisting the group with a bit of advertising assistance and then research of attractions and kids events, so things that might do well. So I'm going to be reaching out to a couple of the Schooner Foundations. There's a little steamboat foundation that goes up
mm-hmm.
to Port Townsend for Victoria Festival, so I'll be doing that, and looking into some kids activities through the Northwest Maritime Center, and anything involving sugar, I'm probably going to look into that too.
So the next meeting is March or February 27th?
February 27th,
okay.
So that will be next Monday.
Given that it's a Saturday, It would probably be helpful for the major marketing guy who's involved in planning events for the market, the farmer's market, to be involved in that conversation.
Got it.
Is this
and I believe that, was that outreach scheduled? Because they were talking about coordinating.
I'll we'll involve him.
Okay, and I can give you the name of the guy who's the marketing.
Okay. Is this the first time they've done this?
No, they do it every year. They're
it's just not
to,
very
they're trying to make it bigger. You know, it's been so yacht club centric, and they're trying to make it more of a community event to celebrate open boating. And I think it's a great idea. I mean, we've talked about having maybe the Schooner Adventures here for people to go out on tours, or the steamboats coming in and kind of putting around the bay. So it's just a way to get excitement over opening day.
Sure, yeah. And then I think Silverdale and Brownsville had a pretty effective event. They even had Marine Center people with cameras underwater, and the kids would watch. So, yeah, I think that would be great. And I hear from you always hear this from NMTA, let's have all these. So I encourage you to come to us for resources to publicize a marina here. I think that's great.
We're still in the what are we going to do phase. You know, how can we do this?
The Steamboat Society had a rendezvous here quite some time ago. These are about particularly 20 to 25-foot boats. They brought Virginia V in, but she ran aground, backing around. But it was a quite a good event. The only problem is there's no place to stay here. Maybe with the casinos now, but there was not a place to put up the people who brought their boats.
The exhibitors.
And maybe you could hit them up again now that we have the casino hotels.
Sure.
But I think they liked the place. They just, you know, staying in Smiley's was not
no longer an option.
We did have, they did come here, and there's a member that's part of Rotary that has a little boat and all. That would be great. Yeah, I don't have a point of contact, but it's the Northwest Steamboat Society. They've been here before. Well, maybe it's not. Yeah. I could ask the person who I. Okay, I'll have to take that. He might know. He launches his boat here occasionally.
And then next up on our list, public records request status. So we currently have 4 open public records requests. We closed 5 of the 9 requests when we got that big influx second week of February. So anticipated close dates for the remaining requests fall into the first week of March. So we should be come back up to 0 by the end of that, knock on wood.
Are all 9 of those related to the unlawful discharge?
No. There's some assumptions that could be what the brunt of the cases were related to, the brunt of the requests were related to. But one of those 9 requests was a different requester. So 8 of those 9 came from one requester, and the request for information does kind of pique that curiosity. Could it be in relation to that case? Potentially, yes. A lot points to it.
Yeah. What are these requests looking for?
Am I permitted to speak about that in open session?
Sure.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Public record requests aren't themselves public records. It's a never-ending circle.
Nature of the requests, there are some specific names as far as a request for emails to and from, so sent from and received by Christine Connors and Steve von Marenholtz for Amazon orders, so orders to and from Amazon. There's a request for all emails from Nancy Payne and Scott Coulter. For a particular date range, it's a pretty broad one, that mention or relating to the word theft, loss, things of that nature. So that's going to be the big request, that one, kind of digging in there and making sure we've got everything presented correctly.
This wasn't some comments I'd made, but we decided to defer them. But could you maintain a spreadsheet that shows us, we used to have one,
that here's the public records request came in, mm-hmm. and here's the dates and the dispositions, so we can come by and review it periodically.
Of course.
That's always been an issue. And that was pretty handy when we had it, but you don't have to repeat the whole public records mm-hmm. request. It's just that you could, if you're going through the office, you could go by and see where we stand on those things.
Of course, and I do actually have kind of a, it's very basic as far as status, you know, when it was given to the port, where we're at, what the next delivery date is, if anything has been delivered on those requests.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I'm basic myself, my knowledge.
So would that include who it was from or what the content was?
So usually what I do, unless I do have one of these requests that are open now, that the response, just the acknowledgement letter, was, you know, 4 pages long, because the body of the request itself is quite intensive. So, you know, in that case, if it's a 4-page long request for records, then I'm going to say, please see, you know, intake form. But that's rare. Most of the time, it lists all of those details on the form.
And you're getting all the access to Carolyn you want.
She's amazing.
User.
You're like $3,000 retainer, user.
The $3,000 is cheap compared to not using.
It sounds like you're able to keep up with the load with your other duties. Is that correct?
As it stands, that is correct. You know, admittedly, there have been some moments of, you know, like, oh, I gotta get this done. But, you know.
Well, 4-page request.
We have a wonderful open environment of communication in the office. And I know that if there is ever a point where I feel overwhelmed or can't meet the demands, if things are, the plates are starting to tip and fall off the little sticks that I'm spinning them on, there are people available that will step in to help, that that's going to be listened to and heard. And I have no problem, you know, saying that I'd rather do things right and ask for help. I have no problem being like, I can't do it. So I'm pretty confident. And then the last on the list is the March calendar of events. And I put a little reminder on there, and I had popped in and asked Jim today after I printed these things, the PDC, the Public mm-hmm. Disclosure Commission, I wasn't sure if that was something that, if it's only on an election year or if it's every year that you're in office,
it's every year.
It's every year. So just your friendly reminder.
Thank you. They email us. I think I can.
Yeah. Do? Okay.
If we don't file it, because the first year I didn't realize it was every year, and they let us know.
Okay. And that. Oh, got it. And there is a correction to the March calendar. On the second page, so the back of that page, you'll notice that I noted a Friday, March 25th, Kites over Kingston. That's a Saturday. So we're going to scratch that and make sure that that will indicate that Saturday for Kites over Kingston this month, or in March.
And how does that help with the farmers?
That's beforehand.
Good.
Yeah, really.
That would have been tough.
Okay.
Great.
Okay. Thank you very much. So now we're going to recess to executive session. How long should we assume to be figure this would be?
Half hour?
Half
hour.
Well, that would make us 4 o'clock, which seems a long meeting.
Okay.
And we have our purposes.
We're recessing to executive session, so there's an opportunity to recess.
Let us reconvene in 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's probably not a bad idea. For no other reason than just to move.
And so is there a motion? Carolyn, would you state the motion as you understand?
That the commission authorizes the executive director to negotiate a comprehensive settlement in 2 pending litigation matters subject to commission ratification.
There.
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion?
No, I think.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
I have two more related matters. I request that the director refer all press communications to our attorney on this matter going forward. I think that that's, I'm kind of concerned about the way it's gone and may prejudice other cases, some of the stuff that's appeared, so I think we need to just be very conservative about that.
Now, and when you say the attorney, is it which attorney, Carolyn?
Yeah.
Our general counsel.
I'm kind of concerned about not prejudicing other cases. So
you're suggesting that anyone, Terry Aslan, Richard Walker calls, he should refer.
Yeah, if it's about the case. Yeah. If it's about the litigation, then it should go to the attorney, especially at this time. Maybe later it would be different, but I think at this point we should. We've done that before. Mm-hmm. I'm more comfortable. And doesn't mind you or anybody, but, you know, when Richard calls up and say, tell me all about, just say, talk to Carol. Is that okay? I think it'd make it easier for you. Yeah.
Do you need a motion?
Oh, one other comment is I was concerned. I think all emails regarding this should be attorney-client. I received one that was an attorney-client, and I felt uncomfortable that was not attorney-client. So any communications regarding this settlement be attorney-client.
Yeah, and they would be. Your concern is to make sure everyone labels it as such.
I think there was information in there that should have been attorney client.
But it can be attorney client privileged even if it doesn't say so.
I understand that, yeah.
But it should
well,
be.
Well, I mean, the staff probably understands.
It's so much easier on public records staff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Labeled. Yeah, labeled, that's right. It should all be labeled that, so.
Yeah.
There's, yeah.
So is the discussion about Jim referring inquiries to Carolyn, is that direction to staff or does that require a motion?
It doesn't require a motion, I'll just do it.
Yeah, okay, I think it's, yeah, unless there's enough, you want to discuss it.
I don't like talking
to a person. Yeah, I don't blame you.
Yeah,
talk about the good
jail
things.
Free card.
talk about
thank you, Walt.
Washington Avenue, or talk about all the great things.
So, at what point will we revisit the question of the attorney relationship for whatever goes forward from here?
My understanding is Carolyn has direction from us.
Okay.
Is that answer? Is that right?
It's the will of the commission.
But we just had this big discussion.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to tie the bow on the issue with Kathleen, because you will have the good fortune to talk with Kathleen and basically let her know what's happening.
Yeah, let's see how this negotiations go.
Okay.
That's going to be a determining factor.
Okay, so our next regular meeting is Wednesday, March 22nd. We'll try the 1 o'clock again, see how we're liking that. And
comment that we may need to meet Monday in executive session. I'm leaving, being out of town, but I could call in on Thursday. I'm going to be leaving, so that's kind of my timeline. But I could call in.
Okay.
So,
now you said Monday. Are we?
Or Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Tuesday is our.
So on Tuesday the 28th, we'll have a work session in the morning and two sessions
in the afternoon.
But we could have an executive session. You mentioned something about that. Yeah.
Yeah, we could have an executive session on that. Would we need a special meeting notice in order to do that?
Yeah, it would be a special meeting.
Well, to take action.
Yeah.
And you'll let us know so early enough.
Yeah.
I mean, we could have an executive session just gathered, but we couldn't take any action.
I think the meeting is. Do I need a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Bob?
Second.
All in favor?
Yes. Right. And it's not quite 4:30.
4:20. You can still do battle at Fort Townsend now.